Accession number 28760, Real Fool.
And the officer in charge, a Dutchman in charge of the camp, he said, "It's finished." We all thought we were mixed. There was a mixture of Dutch and British troops in this camp. And I myself went back to being really bedsores and crying my eyes out. Just the fact of being released. That was it.
You cried?
Yeah.
It was all over, did it?
Yeah.
Just like that, from one day to the next?
Yeah.
No inkling that...
No inkling was finished at all, nothing at all. We didn't know what happened.
And this was post-Hiroshima, I guess.
Oh, yeah, we didn't know about this, what happened at all. We didn't know, no, it was finished. That was it. Finished. And they opened up the camp, opened up the ration store. We had a real good nosh up.
Just went in there.
Yeah. Well, we found a shed full of Red Cross parcels, which you'd never seen before. They were all stored away. And they were using them, we weren't, until we found them. And we got them out and had Red Cross parcels, chocolates, cigarettes. And then the planes came over dropping food and clothing down to us, eventually. And then eventually we found out that they had finished because the atomic bombs were dropped. And although I know it's not the right thing to say, but through dropping the atom bomb, it saved lives, thousands of prisoners of war lives. Because on each camp, there was a boat around each camp at the time, and on the platform in the corners. And we always reckoned that if they'd have invaded Japan, as the Yanks intended, we wouldn't have come home. We'd have got bumped off beforehand.
Meaning what, they would have just gunned you down?
Yeah. In the moats around the camps.
So the Japanese themselves made no mention of the fact that the war was coming to an end. They just, overnight, from one night to the next, they were gone.
They were gone, yeah. Finished, yeah. Finished.
You didn't see any more Japanese?
The only saw was when they ride on the railway line, right back down to base camp. That was all.
So, you're told, someone tells you, the officers, the Dutch officer, the war's over.
Yeah.
You break into the store and...
Yeah.
And then what happens then? Planes start coming over. When is your first contact with American or British?
When we went from the camps up the line down to the main base camp in Thailand, Kambiri.
Who made the decision to do that?
I don't know. We just followed orders.
And you walked out?
No, I went down on the railway. Rode down by train, all the way down through from Burma, down through Malaya, Thailand, down to Kambiri.
And who was
the base camp?
I'm just curious to think. I'm just trying to get at that first moment where you see someone who's not hostile, who's from outside the camp. When was that?
That was when. When we were at Kambiri, when they all came in. With their trucks.
And they were what, Americans?
British. They weren't far away. They told us they knew where we were.
And what how did they treat you? Were they compassionate?
I mean, oh, yeah.
They must have been so shocked to see...
They were shocked to see how the state we were in.
And did they say,
you
poor bastards, you know?
Oh, they were, yeah. That was it, yeah. We were told that we couldn't... We were told by the officer in charge that we weren't to attack any of the Japanese. We were to leave them alone. And I know one chap in the Manchester regiment, he thumped one, and he's brought back to England under escort for court martial. I thought one of the Japanese. They were. So we were tied. He was tied. You can, even when we came home on the troop ship, we couldn't say anything. We arrived back at Liverpool on the trooper. SS Worcestershire, and there was chaps there who had people to see them, meet them at a jetty, even, and they put us all in a big warehouse, put us in lorries, took us on a train back to their units, and that was it. Couldn't say anything.
Going back to I mean, when you came down out of the down to Chonburi, you said,
yeah,
and you saw Japanese there. There were Japanese in camps there, I suppose, who'd surrendered.
Well, yeah, they were in their own camps then, under their own guard, different Australian guard, most of them.
And how long did you spend there before you were put onto a ship to come home?
Oh, what happened was we were almost about a week, I suppose, if that. We were taken to Rangoon. And we flew from... Hang on, I get this right. No, sorry. We went to Bangkok. And we flew from Bangkok to Rangoon. And we were always placed in a naval barracks for a while. Until the troop ships come in through... bring us home.
And you were, you know, you were treated as someone who was convalescing, I suppose.
Well, more or less, yeah.
You were slowly building up your...
Oh, yes, yeah.
...strength and
Some flew home. But they came home. They flew home, but there were 25 Marines and sailors at Rangoon at the time, and we were put on SS, Worcestershire troop ship. Small, flat out of 10 knots, I think it was. Nice cruise back home.
And you were in a hurry to come back?
No, to Liverpool.
And so you arrived in Liverpool in September?
Right about then, yeah. Must have been, yeah.
A bit later, perhaps.
Yeah.
And what were your impressions of coming back to Britain after this incredible experience?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, were you in a state of shock? Was it...
And well, gladness, really. Shock and gladness of being released. And after what we've been through.
And you went home and went on leave?
I went to barracks.
In Plymouth?
Yeah, in Liverpool. We went to Liverpool for they had a barracks in Liverpool, the Navy. We went there from the ship. And they gave us a medical. And the bloke said, it was a waste of time giving you a medical. You're going to say nothing's wrong with you. Anyway, we stayed there, had a meal, and at midnight, we left by train to Plymouth. We were allowed to send telegrams home that we were arrived in England and what have you. And I always remember the train coming down through the line and stopped at Totnes station. And my dad was on the platform. So I gave him a kit bag that I had there. I said, I'll take it. I said, I'll see you later on. And that was it. But in that kit bag was full of fags, cigarettes. Then we got on the troop ship. That was another story. And went back to Roman Barracks Stonehouse. And we marched into barracks, went down the sick bay, another medical, went to the clothing store, got uniforms as such, went to pay office and got money, got paid.
For 3 years?
Well, we didn't get it all at once. There's so much money, leave money. And said, no, leave for 3 months. Double ration card. And that was it.
And so what was it like when you came back to Totnes and in 1945?
Well, when we arrived, when they were in the bags, a mate of mine, he lived at Payton, called Turns in North of Repulse. And I said, come on, John. I said, let's go up and get a bus. And we got a taxi from barracks. Up, I knew where the bus went from. It was the Harvest Home at Plymouth there. What called the Harvest Home? About a technical college it was at the time. And we got a taxi up to the Harvest Home bus. And there's a bloody great queue for the Torquay bus. So we'll get on the end of the queue. We had our kit bag there, each, and in uniform. We're sitting in the queue. and the bus came in. And pulled up at the head of the queue, and the conductor was walking back. He said, "Where are you two going?" I said, "I'm going to talk." He said, "You going to talk?" He said, "Come on then." And he said, "We bypassed the queue, and it's the first on the bus." And I didn't know at the time, after I found out after, that my sister was a conductress on the Western National. And she said that maybe you'll see someone in the queue at Plymouth, a Marine. And that's who it is. And I jumped in the queue. And that was it. And I got off at Shiller's Bridge. I had to walk from Shiller's Bridge up to Broome Park. And someone passed me on the way, a young lady. It happened to be my sister. I didn't recognise her. And she didn't recognise me. And that was it. I had 3 months. 3 months leave.
And did you, did you tell everyone of your experiences? And what were people
very little, actually? Very little. I never mentioned, didn't boast or nothing like that. I just carried on.
And why was that? Because?
Oh, I don't know. I know a lot of people played on it. I know several people that played on it, the fact that they were a prisoner of war and what they went through and all that lot, you know. But I never did. As a matter of fact, even the jobs I was in when I left the Marines, and I was working in a factory in Plimpton for 6 months, about 3 months there, and I was in a particular job doing it and as an inspection in this factory. And one of the directors came in to me and said, "Oh," he said, "we've got a visitor coming in tomorrow to see what we're doing." And he happened to be a Japanese. So I walked out. And after he walked out, the following day, he said to me, so I told him where I've been and what I've been doing. And he agreed. He said, "Yeah, don't blame you." And that was it. Another bother.
When you came to the end of your period of leave, you went back, because you'd signed up for 12, hadn't you?
I had signed up for 12, yeah, and during that 3 months on leave, I had a medical at Newton Abbott. And the doctor there said, "There, right, what do you want to do? Now's your chance. You've signed up for 12 years. You got so much to do. You want to carry on?"
This is a military doctor, or?
It's a civilian doctor at Newton Abbott Hospital. And I thought, well, nothing at Totnes, nothing at Donington. And I was, well, just over 23. So now I said, I'll carry on. And I did. That was it.
So what, you went to the end of your 12?
Yeah.
This interview should go to the end of your service career, really. What other? So then, if you joined in 1938, you left in 1950. Is that right?
I joined in 1938. I did 18 months boys' time. But went after our 3 months leave, went back for what they call a month's revision on the program to get us back into the way of life in the Royal Marines. About 25 of us carried on serving.
People who'd been through the...
Yeah.
In Burma.
Yeah, Burma through the lot, yeah.
They came back.
And we had a month's revision. And after that month's revision, we had another month's leave. And they put us in jobs which they thought suitable for us to carry on in the service. And they put me in as a clerk. I was a C3 clerk in the unit stores, and I got drafted to head office in London, RMO London office, for a while. And while I was up there, they asked me if I wanted to transfer from being a clerk to MT, motor transport. I did that.
I mean, were you in a way, you were given sort of treated with kid gloves, really, because of what you'd all been through?
No, I don't think so. No, because they put me through a junior NCO's course and senior NCO's course. And I wouldn't think I was treated any different than any other chap.
So you went up, you became a corporal, and then you became
a sergeant? Yeah. And I got myself more or less fit. That was the main reason for staying in the Corps, which I did.
How long did that take?
Oh, well, over a period of time, a couple of years, I would think. Because then I started doing tug-of-war, playing hockey, tug-of-war, things like that. I various draft jets, different units abroad.
Where did you go off abroad then?
Malta.
And what were you doing in Malta?
MT transport, water transport.
And this was when?
Different places in Malta and Aden, 4th Heart Commando.
What were you doing?
Suez Canal.
Oh, that's this is of interest. But the Suez Canal, this is well before the Suez crisis.
56.
Oh, so I thought you left after 12, but you.
No, I carried on.
Oh, you carried on.
Oh, we'll help. Oh, sorry.
If you don't mind, no, I'd like to talk about this because this is also of great interest. Do you need to stop for a bit? Are you okay?
Yeah, pretty well. A cup of tea, shall we?
Yeah, why don't we do that? I'll just stop this thing now and make the time. Okay, so you were a clerk until 1950. By this time, your health had come back. And you were training and playing rugby and hockey and so forth.
Took a war, yeah.
And then you went to join the motor transport.
Yeah, in May 1950, drafted to Fort Cumberland to do a course, farmer's course, D3, D2, and D1 course. When I was completed, I was drafted to Commando School, Bickley.
And then you were based in Bickley?
Bickley camp until November 1954. Then I went to 4-2 Commando in August 1955. 4-2 Commando went to Malta, where we were when the Suez Crisis started.
So let's talk about that. I mean, being part of 4-2 Commando, what was your specific role there?
I was in charge of transport.
You were
MT.
a sergeant by now.
Yeah, in transport, yes.
And how was service life then? You know, was it living up to your expectations? Were you enjoying it?
Well, yeah, pretty good. Yes, yeah, very good. Yeah.
And so you went to Malta with 4-2 Commando?
Yeah.
To be based there, or?
Yeah, based in Malta. In Tarfa Barracks, up near Mostar. Yeah.
Were you married by this stage?
Yes, I got married in 1947.
And did your wife come with you to Malta?
No. She came for holiday when I was in Malta. She came out for a month and stayed six months. Yeah, nearly 6 months anyway, yeah.
And how was Malta then in this is, sorry, this is what, 55?
55, yeah.
It had recovered, I mean, it wasn't, the bomb damage had been replaced.
All repaired, yes, it was, yeah. Yeah, all repaired, well, yeah, all around. Very good place then. I've been back since, and it's changed again. Hell of a difference.
But did you like it as a posting?
As a posting mode, it was quite good, yes. Yeah.
And what were your duties there?
Just ordinary MT duties, looking after transport.
Because there was quite a big
units were going off different things, exercises.
And then suddenly the Suez Crisis blows up. can we talk about that? This is you hadn't been to Aden yet, had you?
No.
Right, Aden was later. Yeah. Okay, so if we talk about the Suez Crisis then, what happened?
We just landed at Suez, at Port Said.
No,
as a commando.
I just want to sort of get back to you're in Malta, and suddenly you get the command to take what ship you were, because you were shore based.
Yeah.
So what ship did you?
We went loaded all the transport up on the troop carrying ship Anzio. I think it was the Anzio. LSTs. We went from Malta to Port Said, Suez, and landed with the 4th Guard Commando.
Was this while the fighting was going on and the bombing, or had that already?
Well, as it started, there wasn't much bombing as such at Port Said. It didn't last very long anyway. Only had a couple of days.
And so you deployed. Did you go alongside there? Or what?
Yeah, we went ashore, yeah. So, yeah, landed in Port Said. Yeah.
And what happened? What were your impressions?
From what we could see as MT, all we were doing was just bringing up supplies and troops. And the troops themselves were further ahead of us. Yeah.
And then you knew there was fighting, did you?
Well,
know
there was fighting,
about?
Yeah, there was fighting. We lost one or two of our own people. As a matter of fact, the most we lost was by friendly fire.
What happened?
One of the vehicles that was was attacked by a French fighter pilot, and killed about four Marines.
So you had the French, you had the Israelis, you had the Brits.
Yeah.
Did you see any Israeli troops?
No, I didn't personally, no.
Because it was on the other side, of course.
Yes, right, yeah.
But you had the French.
The French was there, they were there as well, yeah. But the thing is, you realise that, I mean, I was just a common Marine. I was just doing more or less following orders. They weren't in the front line as such. Not in the transport.
What about the local populace? How did you know the reputation of?
Well, we saw them. We were quite good. They didn't care. They couldn't care less. What was happening? They didn't see any bother.
So you were there for just a few.
If a week at that, I think it was, if that.
And then you were pulled out.
Yeah, we went back to Malta. And I returned back to barracks in. December 56.
Back to barracks in Plymouth.
Sorry, nice, yeah.
What happened after that?
After that, in July 57, I was drafted to HQ Commando in back to Malta again, 57. And we.
Well, again, you were in transport?
Yeah, in transport all the time, yes. In St. George's Barracks, Malta. We did exercises in North Africa, Sardinia.
This is in 1957.
57, 58.
What were these exercises? Can you remember?
Well, just all the exercises we should do. Every so often we should go leave Malta and go up in the desert, do desert training, things like that, camouflaging, doing convoy work.
And you were again driving vehicles,
organizing
the transport.
Yeah, in charge of transport. Yes.
What kind of vehicles were these? Bedfords and
Bedford 3-tonners. One ton, 1508, 3-tonners, motorbikes.
What kind of motorbikes did you have?
I myself had a Matchless, 350 Matchless. And I remember one time I was going on exercise across, we had to go from Tobruk to Benghazi by road. And the day before the exercise started, my bloody motorbike broke down. So I had to change it. And they gave me a 500 Beza, BSA, rigid forks. God. And I do it 400 bar, and I'm letting Beza wasn't very comfortable, I'm going to show you. And so you are, one of those things.
A big old, what was it, an M21 or an M33?
Yeah.
I used to have an M33, yeah. So I know about those bikes.
Not yeah.
And so then... see what happens next. So these are fairly routine exercises, and then
yeah, and I left Malta on December 19th, 58, and after leave I was drafted to Poole in Dorset, in the when they transported it there. And I stayed there until 1960 and went back to Bickley with 42 Commando. And then in November of 63, I was drafted to 45 Commando in Aden.
Let's talk about that. That's quite an interesting period.
Yeah.
What was your experience there? What happened? Did you go out with a squad, or were you just posted to individually?
I was a sergeant major of transport, because of QMS by then. Of the 4-5 Commando. And you know, right about, 25 three-tonners. On one ton truck, Jeeps, or Land Rovers rather. And then we had the trouble up in the Red Fan, up in the hills.
Trouble between?
The front, south, what do you call them? Yemenis.
The Yemeni, yeah.
Yemenis, yeah, and Aden, yeah. The trouble in the Red Fan.
And so what was your experience there? You went...
Up in the hills, very nice. Hey! Not bad.
Did you see any action there?
No, not a lot. No, not then. Not as regards to transport. We were in the rear of it. Had the trouble. We just kept doing the supply system.
So you'd be running up from the port?
Running up from camp, base camp up to... up through... The road there, along the Rarut riverbeds.
You go to Sana'a and up that way?
Where?
Sana'a, whether that was the port that's in Oman. I've been to that.
No, I haven't been to that one, no.
Right, okay. No. So you didn't see any... When these convoys went up, were they escorted or were they...
Oh, yeah, you escorted me on your motorbikes. And the rough, very rough road. And we used to do it two or three times a week.
And what stories did the people who were up there fighting tell you about their experience of the fighting up there?
Well, I don't know, it's hard to say. You didn't see much of them. You couldn't see much of them. And he still don't know what it was all about, really.
And these were special SAS people when they up there?
They were up there, I believe, yeah. I believe so, yeah.
And the your 45 commander was there too?
Oh, they were there, yeah. His troops, yeah. But what they were doing, I don't know, you know.
Because there were some bad ambushes up there, weren't there? Quite a lot of British troops were killed, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember any of that?
No, I don't. No. You hear about it, like, you know, but you didn't take part in much of it.
And then what happened after that?
I came back from Aden in 40. Where are we?
We're now in...
It's 64. I came up from Aden in 64. I got drafted to Eastney Barracks in charge of the driver training wing at Fort Cumberland until the 18th of April, when I was drafted back to Bickley to wait my discharge.
So could you have renewed? Or was this?
No, that was the time I finished 5th.
You couldn't go on any
longer? No, I didn't wish to anyway.
You'd had enough?
No, I'd had enough, yeah. 27 years.
That was enough.
Yeah.
Could you have gone on?
I don't know. I never tried. Never bothered to find out.
And why was it enough? You just.
Well, I was 45. I mean, it was old enough to find another job. I mean, you get a job at 40, 45, but after that, you find a decent job in civilian life.
So how did you feel then about leaving? I mean, I just think you've been in this, you know, it's a large part of your
life. It was a wrench. And leave all your mates. I miss them. But
they give you a good leaving party when you left?
Oh, about one or two in the messes. Sergeant's mess. Yeah.
And how, I mean, I just, very briefly, how do you think the service had changed in that period that you were in there?
No, totally different.
From 40, you know, 38 to 66 when you left. It was a more modern service, it was slimmed down, it was...
Oh, it's certainly more modern, yeah, in 38, 32, 45, yeah. Yeah. There's more activity, more, what can I say, military-wise, it was a lot better. Yeah. Discipline was still the same.
Great. Well, is there anything else that you think we haven't covered that we should have, that strikes you about your service career? Just
can't even in the moment, not now, not offhand, no.
Okay. Well, we'll stop it there. That's great. Thank you very much.